I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is Tech Central's business technology show, TCS Plus. If you haven't done so yet, please subscribe on YouTube at youtube.com/TechCentral, or subscribe to our daily newsletter at techcentral.co.za/newsletter and get all the latest tech news in your inbox every morning at 5 a.m. Now, this is the third in a series of exciting interviews we're doing with Telkom's OpenServe, executives rather from Telkom's OpenServe, to get a good feel for the business and where it's headed. And today, I'm very pleased to welcome the big kahuna himself. Elthan Birkus is chief executive of OpenServe. Good to see you, sir. How are you doing?
Thank you. Thank you, Duncan. And thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Welcome to Tech Central. Thanks for making the time to come and chat to our audience today. As I mentioned, this is part of a series we're doing on OpenServe, and we've already chatted with Pushkar Gokhale and Pila Dubey. I hope I'm pronouncing the names correctly. And they've provided some really interesting insights into the business so far. But today we're going to talk big picture, strategy, and where OpenServe is going. So I'm really looking forward to that discussion. But Elthan, you've been with Telkom for a long time. You've been in the OpenServe business for a long time. You've been leading it, I think, for the last 4.5 years or so. Yeah. But OpenServe has been through some very interesting changes in the last... How long has it been around now? Is it 8, 9 years?
It's, 2015.
Okay. 9 years.
About 9 years, where we've repositioned the brand, Telkom Wholesale, to OpenServe. And really, it was linked to the Competition Commission challenges that we had in the around 2010, 2011, and then we used that opportunity not only just to comply to the requirements of the Competition Commission findings, but also to use that as to reposition the business, and hence the repositioning as the OpenServe brand. Started off with a separate P&L in 2015, as I said, separate brand. And then, of course, we had a very structured approach in terms of internal traded products. So this is typically your copper, DSL services, voice services. Most of those were still internal traded products. And then slowly we evolve into a complete open access where all of our products are available on a standard commercial basis, not only just to Telkom retail, but also to the market. And roll forward to 2022, when we did the legal separation of OpenServe, and hence we've been operating for that now for the last year and a half or so.
Right, so a legal separation, what does that actually entail?
So now we OpenServe P2L Limited.
Okay, which means you're a subsidiary of Telkom.
Subsidiary of Telkom, separate board, separate exco, and really arm's length, transparent relationship with the market as well as with Telkom retail.
Right, so in theory, you treat Telkom and internet service providers the same.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That's your mantra.
That's our mantra of we operate on a rate card with all ISPs, including Telkom. The only time where we, it's wholesale pricing, as I said, transparent pricing to the market as well as to the Telkom retail channels. The only time when we have differentiated pricing is when you have volume and term commitment. Mm-hmm. And those are typical. That's just normal. If you can secure long-term business, obviously we'll give you better pricing,
sure,
as well as volume, of course.
Yeah.
So that's the only exception. Otherwise, everybody gets the same price.
Yeah. Now, you've spun out of Telkom, its own brand, now legally separated as a subsidiary of Telkom. Now, these are key milestones, but they must have involved one heck of a lot of change internally as well. I mean, you're coming out of historically a monopoly position as a telecommunications operator in South Africa. You're being thrust into a competitive market. Your go-to-market model has changed quite dramatically in the last 10 years. What has that meant from a cultural perspective? I mean, have you had to force a lot of internal change within the organization to make it better suited to serving perhaps a different set of customers or serving those customers in a different way?
Absolutely, and it's at a number of levels. But firstly, I think it helped quite a bit with initial brand, having a bit of a brand. And if I can just take you a step back further, with our previous CEO, Sipho Maseko, in terms of what we, the value unlock, or what we used to refer to, the sum of parts are more than the whole. And hence that journey started there in terms of OpenServe. So we did a lot of work, obviously, in terms of culture, change management. You know, when you're part of a, you know, you use the word monopoly, a point in time, it, you know, you used to have a bit of freedom in terms of investment, you know, and particularly in terms of that investment rationale, it was always about what is the best technology.
Okay.
Not necessarily what is the demand of the customer. So we focus a lot on building a carrier grade network. I mean, you know, until about 5-6 years ago, well, 5 years ago, just before I joined, we still had an enterprise-grade network for enterprise customers. We had a separate broadband network for consumers. You know, our high-capacity backhaul links were separate technology stacks. So all of those we had to adjust and really start repositioning us more as a commercial business. Mm-hmm. Technology only makes sense if you can monetize it.
Yeah.
So that adjustment in terms of, and hence why, you know, you've met Pilar, you know, the chief commercial officer, focus on growing the external revenue, the brand, and again, you know, also having a partnership approach with our customers, both mm-hmm. internally as well as externally, especially as a wholesaler. Mm-hmm. You need to be close to what is the requirements of the customers, how's the market evolving, and then adapt. That's the one thing you need to, I think that has also changed quite a bit, that we had to adapt very fast. And even today, we continuously have mm-hmm. to adapt depending on the challenges in the market. And you're 100% right, the competitive landscape over the last 10 years, you know, as I said, I've been in this industry, you know, about 30 years. So the last 10 years has been phenomenal in terms of the competitive landscape. Mm. At any point in time, we compete with about 80 odd competitors.
Wow.
Yes, from the small niche regional player, I call sometimes the opportunistic guy that will just fire up a complex or a retail park. Mm-hmm. But all of the above. So interesting times in terms, and we had to adapt in terms of that commercial approach. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask a bit about consolidation in the market a bit later in the discussion, because there is clearly a lot of competition out there, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in the coming years. But it certainly seems that OpenServe has become a lot more strategic in the way it focuses. And I think we see that in the fiber to the home numbers, your connectivity rate or attachment rate, or the number of homes that mm-hmm. actually sign up for your fiber services is the highest in the market, if I'm not mistaken, at around 50%, right?
Absolutely. It's sitting around 49%, 48.5%, 49% right now. And it's not a coincidence.
Yeah. I mean,
it's clearly how we've done quite a bit of analysis in terms of demand. And there's also, and just to clarify, you know, our connectivity rate has got actually very little to do with our previous DSL base.
Mm-hmm.
Most of our fiber business is actually new business.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. So,
yeah,
okay.
It's mostly new business. In fact, the bulk of our DSL base, which you will recall, was less than 10 meg. And with the event of the mobile data play, most of those base actually migrated to mobile.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah, so that's just out of interest.
Yeah. If,
I would say roughly about 60, 70% of that base actually went to mobile. So it was about strategically, how do we getting that back? So we'd obviously, being in the market for a long time in the fixed world, understanding the market segments, understanding the importance of our channel. And that's why I touched earlier on the brand and credibility in terms of our brand. That was quite key
mm-hmm.
in building up that credibility. And then, of course, using that channel, which has been very successful. 60 to 65% of our broadband base is actually via other ISPs outside of the telecom mm-hmm. retail group. So now, considering we're coming from a era where 80% of the DSL base was via the telecom channel, just to give you a bit of context in terms of that. So that is what we had to do. And it is a very simple model, you know. We suddenly, the top 20 ISPs in the market all of them has the unique value proposition on the same access that we provide, but each of them has a different value proposition, and hence why that gives us that ability to continuously connect and work very closely with obviously with them in terms of understanding the demands in the network and where they see the demands as well.
It's very clear that OpenServe now has, if I can term it this, has open access religion. Yes. You guys are married to this model. You believe in it. Just maybe take us through why open access is so important to OpenServe's business model.
Let's start with the infrastructure business. We operate a national network, and this a national fiber network, 170,000 kilometers of fiber. About 80% of that is actually core and aggregation on a national footprint. To maintain that network, firstly, you have to continuously invest in network, number one, and of course it costs to operate those networks. In a competitive landscape, it was quite key that we maximize our commercial reach in terms of monetizing that. And hence, we went on a strategy, open access. Firstly, as I said, it was really started opportunistically with the Competition Commission, but then we took it a few steps further in terms of building a business model around that, because it was key that we see the demand in data, and was important that all of our channels, whether it is the mobile operators, whether it was the ISPs or enterprise business channel, all of them actually have a faith in the brand and the ability to compete. And our business model is really about, give the most reliable service in the market through the best customer experience. So that's kind of just as a, and it's just as a simple model in terms of, the integrated retail play is problematic. Mm-hmm. And a closed network is problematic. And a lot of our competitors learn the hard way. So we've learned those lessons.
Some of them still have that model.
Yeah. Some of them still had. And we've learned those lessons through the previous integrated telco model.
Right.
And hence, this is, we believe, the best of both worlds. Telkom is still an anchor customer of open access, of OpenServe. And then, the rest of the network spare capacity. So we don't build for Telkom, just the anchor customer. But the only way to monetize a national network, you need to make sure you maximize your reach, and that is the open access.
I think it was quite significant a few years ago when, and I think it actually signaled to the market how much Telkom and OpenServe have changed, was when you guys joined the Internet Service Providers Association. Those who remember the history back to the 1990s, ISPA was formed to fight Telkom at the time, and now you're a member of that same body. How significant was it when you guys joined the Internet Service Providers Association?
Well, it was absolutely. It's key that, for us to be successful in a South African context, we must be part of all the formal forums, and we're not just ISPA, I'm part of the Digital Council, a number of industry bodies, because I think it's important that, because we all face similar challenges in the market. But probably the most rewarding thing about ISPA is when they recognize us as the best FNO in the market, okay. which was probably for me the highlight, if you have to. The one was joining on the second one, obviously, is when they recognize, the journey we've been on and what we've achieved. Yeah.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the state of the telecommunications infrastructure market in South Africa. Give me the big picture view. Based on some reports I've been reading lately, it seems that maybe there's a little bit of a slowdown in terms of the fiber build-out in the last year or so. Is that actually the case? Are things starting to slow? And if so, why are they slowing? Give us the big picture overview of what the market looks like right now.
So, okay, I can talk a little bit. Let me just focus on the fix for now.
Sure.
I said earlier we've got about, at any point in time, about 80 competitors. It is clear, there has to be market consolidation, and it has been happening. There's a lot of small regional players that if you just look at the growth of Vumatel, in its initial phases was through acquisitions. Mm. And there's still a lot of that happening, and that will continue to happen. If you look at the infrastructure business and the fiber business, it's a long-term play. I have this very simple saying, it's easy to build networks, but really it's about manage and operate this business in a sustainable manner. because your returns in this type of infrastructure business, we're looking at 10, 15, 20 years, in some case even longer. Mm-hmm. So this is a long-term play. It's a patient business, but it requires significant investment. So obviously everybody jumped on the wagon in terms of the growth and in terms of fiber, data explosion, and et cetera. And hence, yes, the market is basically overtraded right now in terms of fiber operators. So consolidation is inevitable. You're 100% right. We certainly notice that there's a slowdown in terms of fiber build. We're still on our same strategy. We haven't really changed because we still see the demand. And you can see from our connectivity rate that, whatever we build, we monetize. And that will continue. So we're certainly on the same strategy in terms of our fiber build, which again, maybe just to summarize, when it comes to FTTH or fiber to the home, it's a pre-provision strategy, obviously based on the right market demand. On our enterprise and backhaul, it is on demand. Mm-hmm. So it's only time we build is when there's order. Mm-hmm. So that's just two cents. But in the pre-provision side, which is where most of the competitors are operating in, that is certainly slowed down, yes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And in terms of fixed and wireless, you mentioned that a lot of the ADSL customers who are moving off that network have actually gone to your fixed mobile network.
Correct.
If you speak to Rain, they'll give you a view that the future is wireless. Other players in the market are investing heavily in fiber to the home, fiber to the business. Where do you see this going? I mean, is mobile going to improve to the point, or wireless technology going to improve to the point in the next 10 years that maybe it could displace fiber, or do you see a place for fiber in your network for decades to come?
So, absolutely decades to come. So hopefully there's not a debate in terms of the technology. In theory, the way you should look at fiber, it's actually unlimited spectrum. Mm-hmm. That's effectively what it is. It's unlimited spectrum. So just using that as an analogy, the wireless world operates in a finite amount of spectrum.
Yeah.
So in theory, it's really no real argument in terms of the foundation of the digital economy, if I can use that as a reference point. Fiber complements mobile, and there's times when it makes more sense to deploy a wireless technology. We do. Mm-hmm. I mean, we do deploy satellite as open surf. We do deploy microwave because it makes sense. Mm-hmm. And fixed wireless access makes sense. LTE, 5G makes sense. So I think it's all complementary. But I'm fairly confident in terms of as fiber as the foundation of telecommunications infrastructure.
Including in the last mile.
Absolutely, the last mile as well, because that's quite interesting. And you asked me about you speaking to Rain. And it's absolutely a fact that when I look at the market, I see them as a competitor. Mm-hmm. And absolutely, it's no coincidence. Our speeds are not a result of what other competitors are doing. It's actually what the mobile operators are doing and what they're capable of doing.
Right.
So certainly we monitor that market well because we compete in the same, from a broadband perspective, we effectively operate in the same market segment.
Okay. And I'd be remiss not to ask you about copper in your network. You've been removing it quite aggressively over the last few years. How big is your ADSL base in 2024 and when will that disappear completely, do you think?
We really on our last, I would say the last 24 months of that, and maybe just to give you a few numbers, I think in the last financial year, we reported around 80,000, just over 80,000 DSL services still.
Wow, I didn't realize it was that low.
Yes, it's really that low, and it's lower now. Mm-hmm. So it's even lower as a reference point. We're now lower than 60,000, if you want, just to give you a sense.
Below 60, okay.
Below 60,000, you know.
So you say 24 months and DSL will be gone.
So that's, in theory, we can provide fiber services in our entire DSL base, number one. Number two is, it's quite interesting, the customers that still on DSL wants to be on DSL.
Why?
Businesses wants to be on DSL. It is just, sometimes it goes with a voice service.
Oh.
And I mean, a small little fact again, remember during load shedding. So load shedding was actually a friend of DSL in a weird way, mm-hmm. because when it comes to copper services, you have always dealt on your home because we provide the power from our exchanges. So certainly that was the weird way load shedding became slowed down in terms of our copper decline. Or the, you know, it's not that we're not selling copper services, certainly, but it managed to decline in an interesting way. So there's, yeah, that's where we are with our copper. I mean, in terms of our copper exchanges, and this is what we call our power-hungry exchanges, because obviously, as I said earlier, we power actually the remote connection to the home from our exchanges. You know, the last 4 years, we started with about 120. We're now down, the end of last financial, down to 56
exchanges.
Copper exchanges. So this is where we have legacy copper technology. I mean, we've already, our target year is to reduce that 56 to about 40 this financial year. And that's kind of the timing of those 24 months is in line with that. Now, based on the footprint, in theory, we can operate the current copper base with basically four exchanges. And the reason why I say four, because we've got a dual vendor strategy in copper, the same as we have in fiber. And then you always have redundancies. You need at least two of each. Mm-hmm. But in theory, that's kind of... And then you can operate that at a very, you know, low cost. We don't have a lot of operating costs associated with copper. Mm. We don't have dedicated copper skills. We don't have maintenance contracts associated with copper. It is just what I touched on earlier, is the indirect operating cost when it comes to power and cooling. Mm-hmm. That is really the big benefit that we are getting right now.
Right. Actually, in your most recent set of, for Telkom's most recent set of financial results, and maybe we can go through that in a little bit of detail, it provided some context into the performance of the open server business, but I particularly noticed that you've been managing your costs very well, and I was interested to see that you've managed to reduce the volume of diesel that you've used to power your infrastructure. How have you managed to do that? Because that reporting period included quite a bit of load shedding.
So, again, you know, I've got a very simple saying, never waste a crisis. and certainly load shedding was that crisis for us that created opportunity for alternative energy. And certainly what we've done in the last 18 months, about half of our core nodes runs now on batteries as a primary standby. So that's kind of, now this is obviously your smaller sites, because I mean, I can give you a sense of the power consumption of our big sites. And then on our big sites, we focus on what we called exchange optimization, what I've just touched on earlier. All our power-hungry copper legacy infrastructure, we've decommissioned, we've optimized it. So, you know, that we accelerated that program suddenly during load shedding, because suddenly the cost of diesel drove a lot of that business case for that. So half of our sites we can now run on batteries, primary standup, 4 to 6 hours. And then we've also embarked on a solar strategy on our smaller sites. So about 20% of our smaller sites we intend running on a hybrid solar strategy. But again, it was really the opportunity that was, what was all the risks that was created by load shedding that forced us down that path. But at the same time, suddenly we had a very clear strategy around green energy and alternative energy to diesel, and that's effectively what we've managed to achieve. Yeah.
Okay, but
and that's in a sustainable manner. I mean, that is really what we've built in. Yeah.
But with the end, I'll put that in inverted commas for now, of load shedding, it's been coming up for 5 months of no load shedding now. You must be very, very pleased.
Certainly. But at the same time, you know, we're watching load reduction very carefully.
Right.
I mean, just to give you numbers, in the height of stage 2 and 4, We generated about 20% of our power through diesel. On load reduction, we're sitting about 2%. So it's not material.
I mean, it's
still there. And again, especially our big sites, you know, if some of those sites, and I mean, just to give you a sense, our top 10 sites in terms of power consumption per hour, and I don't know, do you have solar and batteries at home? But just to give you a sense, our top 10 sites operate, you know, between 300 kilowatts to 1.4 megawatts per hour.
Wow.
Just to give you a sense. So when that when exchange like that runs on generators, I mean, battery is not an option
mm-hmm.
when we function at that level as a standby option. So there are strategies, obviously, to optimize and reduce the power consumption load. And maybe just to give you a sense, we've reduced our power consumption demand from Eskom with about 30% in the last 24 months. Mm-hmm. Just to give you a sense of, and that was through, and hence, of course, it reduces also not only the demand on the grid, but also to provide secondary power through diesel to keep that network up and running.
And to what extent is OpenServe involved in the mobile high sites, or is that all run by Telkom Retail?
It's running by Telkom Mobile, and so the RAN is really run by them. Of course, we provide backhaul managed, so we do the national fiber transmission for Telkom Mobile as well as the backhaul access for them. About 1,000, we've got roughly our core network nodes is about 1,700, and about 1,000 of them are co-located with mobile towers. Of course, that's closely linked to the SwiftNet transaction. Mm-hmm. But that also talks about uptime of those sites. It also talks about the sustainability of that backhaul revenue
mm-hmm.
due to the co-location. So that kind of also just give you a bit of stickiness.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we are busy with a tower transaction, doesn't really put our backhaul revenue at risk in that context.
Right. Yeah. Understood. Alison, take me through some of the big projects that OpenServe is currently busy with or is looking at doing in the future. I mean, obviously, fiber is an ongoing project that you're involved with, but what are some of the other interesting things you're involved with at the moment?
So, in fact, you said earlier you spoke to my team, so I think they've given you a little bit, some color in some of the key initiatives. But I think we embarked 4.5 years on our digital strategy, which is core to our business. So that is ongoing. We've got a major IT transformation, and we've separated our digital innovation from our IT transformation, and for obvious reasons, speed of execution. These IT projects usually are long term. Yeah.
And if anyone wants more information about that project, we had a detailed interview with Pushkar. Yes. Well worth going to listen to, so again, go and have a listen
absolutely.
Back to that. Yeah.
But we also run a major IT transformation right now. And why that is important, I gave you earlier timelines of 24 months. So we've got legacy IT systems. We've already actually replaced the technology stack for fiber. From an OSS perspective, I think Pushkar gave you context also in terms of the BSS deployment that we've done. And literally we're working as the transformation is to migrate all of our fiber products to our new technology OSS stack. And again, the timing is quite key because we want to switch off those systems in the next 24 months. And that is 100% in line with our copper decommissioning. So we don't want to migrate a legacy copper inventory and to our new IT stack. So that's also from a timing. So that's really on the big IT transformation side, I think. Then I think we obviously do see market consolidation. You probably will want to ask me questions.
About we're going to get to that in a moment.
So that's obviously something that we are monitoring very closely. Certainly, as I said to you earlier, we're currently, in terms of our growth to our external market, you can see we're sitting around in fiber. It's closer to a 60-40 split. So now it gets to that point, and this has really been the strategy always, is to make sure you diversify your revenue, not to just have Telkom as your key anchor customer. Back in our days, 80% of our revenue was associated with Telkom. It's down to 60%, and we are getting closer to our strategic range to about a 50-50 split between Telkom as a channel or as a customer versus the rest of the market. And then the next question is then, do you need to own 100% of that business when...
of OpenServe.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. When it's only enabling effectively 50% of our retail business.
Mm-hmm.
Not in a bad way, because you've now diversified your revenue. So that's kind of really been the next big phase that we're on, and we're on track. As I said, this year will be a big jump into that. We've basically de-risked the legacy legacy retail revenues. We touched early on copper. And hence, that's one of the next important steps that we certainly are looking for that strategic partner. And the reasons are very simple, Duncan. If you look at our market, and most of our technology is based on and global OEMs. So having a strategic partner with better global leverage is quite key. You know, we operate in a global market. We have a lot of global operators sneaking in and making investments in the local market. So for us to stay competitive and take it to the next level, I think it's important that we also have a little bit of that global reach. Mm-hmm. And then certainly we also continue to look at, opportunity in the rest of the continent. Certainly these opportunities, starting basically with just, managed services in those regards, especially around the SADC region, we are looking at opportunities there. But eventually also looking at obviously investing in some of sort of that's because it's kind of a natural adjacent market for us. But for now, we've got plenty of demand in SA still. So that's continued to be the focus. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So just on a strategic equity partner for the business, are you in active discussions with anyone at the moment or is it... Are you waiting for the outcome of the current regulatory processes?
Yes, to be honest with you, that's actually it. Okay. I think we are monitoring it very closely, so we don't want to carry... I mean, we've had conversations with a number of players. So let's just put that out there. So we've had interest, but obviously the current Vodacom CIVH framework, and that would give us, whatever the outcome would be, that will give us the type of... recipe in terms of how to move forward, as also who are the right partners. Because you don't want to go through a 4-5 year M&A and Competition Commission approval.
Vodacom and CIVH.
Certainly, I'm too old for that. I'm not so sure I'm going to be around that type of timeline. Yeah.
Certainly, they've been through the ringer on this regulatory ringer on this process. So, Alfin, do you think that the outcome of the current competition processes around the Vodacom CIVH massive transaction is going to kickstart that consolidation process in the market that you're expecting?
Absolutely. I think we all monitoring it very closely. And again, we've been neutral on it for obvious reasons, and a number of other players have been neutral because we really want. I think it's important. Initiative currently that is and a call the Competition Commission needs or the tribunal has to make because obviously the Competition Commission already made their recommendation. But I think it's a very important and strategic play for the market. Mm. And that will obviously trigger, to your point, absolutely trigger opportunities. And we are monitoring those opportunities in the market as well. So certainly that is quite key as a next step, mm-hmm. To trigger that next step.
And what would you as OpenServe like to see out of this current process? Do you think the deal should just be approved? Do you think conditions should be attached to it? I mean, what are some of the issues you think the Competition Tribunal should be considering?
So, as OpenServe, we have been able to compete fairly comfortably, and I say comfortably because competition is healthy. Mm-hmm. Let's just be frank. I think the monopoly we enjoyed was not good for the country. We all agree on that. When you're on the other side, yes, you enjoy it, but once you absolutely have stifled growth and investment. So certainly we believe that if you want to continue to see investment in the infrastructure, that is quite key that that type of consolidation is allowed. But of course, there has to be some rules around it. So we agree there needs to be some conditions. And those are the conditions that we are obviously are monitoring very closely. But we absolutely agree that market consolidation is inevitable. We are fairly comfortable that we can compete with whether it's a combined entity. We've been doing it very successfully over the last decade or so since most of these operators has really come into the market. So absolutely, that will trigger it, but we're fairly confident that we'll be able to compete. But obviously, myself is interested, so there must be some conditions.
But you must have been surprised then that the Competition Commission actually recommended to the tribunal that the deal be blocked, and you don't agree with that. I mean, you feel that this needs to happen for the sake of the industry.
I think it needs to happen for the sake of the industry. Secondly... Look at the approach. I would have been, you know, I would have taken a little more subtle approach when the way the two parties approached the deal. I think they've scored a few little own goals, so they've made it kind of difficult for the Competition Commission as well. But I mean, for me, it is the principle of market consolidation is inevitable. It has to happen in terms of to continue to foster investment and growth in the market.
Alison, lastly, I'm going to ask you to perhaps look into your crystal ball a little bit about where OpenServ is going. Where do you see this organization going in the coming years? And are there any lessons that we can draw from other markets, like, for example, the UK with OpenReach and what they've been doing? Where do you see this going? And what are the lessons from other markets for the South African context, do you think?
I think it's quite interesting that you ask me that, because I think we've been ahead of the rest of the markets globally. Absolutely. If you look at the OpenReach example, you can look at the NBN example in Australia. And I think, you know, they've taken a slightly different approach than us. BT basically just access. We have full transmission, full control of the fixed infrastructure. And certainly we see that as a much more sustainable business model. And I think we probably in the last, as I said, last 24 months of extracting efficiency, but, you know, very comfortable and, you know, with the growth that we've seen in terms of the fiber market with the current market dynamics. So I actually think it's a, you know, in the local market, absolutely, our strategy is on point, and we'll accelerate that. You know, as I said, it's there's a number of elements to what we're executing currently, and it's something that you need to continually do, and that's the whole thing about infrastructure. It is not a once off. It's a sustainable long term strategy, and you need to execute day in and day out. And we've got, fortunately, a wonderful team and people in the business that is driving that and believe in that on a day-to-day basis. And then, of course, as I said, I do see, you know, possible strategic partners in the future. And of course, certainly we have ambition to expanding the rest of Africa as well.
Excellent. Well, OpenServ really is a fascinating company, and it's operating in a fascinating space. Alison Beerkus is CEO of OpenServ. I thank you so much for sharing your insights and views with the Tech Central audience today. It's much appreciated.
Thank you, Duncan. It's an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.